You are listening to Independence West on VOA.
We got the wonderful François Sue in the production booth. We got Arash Arabasadi, a brand new co-host with us in the studio. We got Maria Nunez Oliver with us. This is Independence West. I'm Robert D. Welcome to the program. So we're going to start talking about movies today because Oblivion, the latest movie starring Tom Cruise, opened last weekend. Apparently very strongly, I understand it topped the box office with something like $38.2 million in receipt. Believe it or not, that sort of things is extremely important in the United States. People pay a lot of attention here in the States to the actual receipts, the actual sums of money a movie makes on its opening weekend. In a couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to Adam Vary of BuzzFeed.com, who wrote a very, very interesting article a week ago, I think it was, on the apparent success of Oblivion, a science fiction movie in which Tom Cruise plays the role of someone who believes he's the last person on Earth, something like 60 years after an alien attack pretty much destroyed the planet, and there are remnants of civilization on other worlds, on other planets, something of that sort. Anyway, I understand from the trailers that the movie, you know, has absolutely beautiful filming, beautiful shooting. Maria, you actually got a chance to see it. What did you think?
I liked it a lot. I found it actually fairly unmemorable.
Okay.
It seemed like a lot of other post-apocalyptic movies.
So is it a beautiful but dumb movie?
Exactly. Storyline, I felt, was extremely lacking.
I heard that exact term used for Point Break. I don't know if you remember Point Break, the Keanu Reeves movie 20 years ago. I didn't feel it was dumb at all for some reason. You saw Point Break, didn't you?
I mean, when I saw it, yeah, I barely remember it. I can tell you
Was it that unmemorable?
It was pretty unmemorable to me. I remember the masks. That's about what I remember from that movie.
Okay. Well, there you go. You have a cultural monument right there. Adam Vary, you did get a chance to see Oblivion, right?
I did, yes.
How did you like it?
You know, I would have to agree. I thought it was really, really gorgeous nothing.
Okay.
The cinematography and the production design and just the look of it was some of the most beautiful filmmaking I've seen in a while, but the story supporting it really didn't amount to much of anything at all, ultimately.
Let me ask you this. I mean, I imagine the movie lasts something like 2 hours. Did you get bored at any point in the movie in spite of what you perceived as the emptiness of the story?
That's a very good question. I can't say I was ever bored because I was always, at the very least, intrigued by the beauty of what I was seeing. The director, Joseph Kosinski, was trained as an architect at Columbia, and that sort of sense of precision and of the economy of space was really something that a lot of filmmakers today don't pay a lot of attention to. They throw a lot of things at the screen and hope that you're able to sort of make sense of all of it. Whereas Joseph Kosinski, he at least was always aware of what you should be looking at and how you should be looking at it and what was the most important thing. And all that was, at the very least, sort of, I could always lean on that. I could always say, oh, it's so pretty, if I was not that interested in what was happening in the story.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the director, Kosinski, does little, whereas some other movie directors, as you seem to imply, do maybe too much?
Yeah, I would, you know, he, when he was training at Columbia, he trained sort of predominantly in computer drafting. So he can sort of speak fluent computer. And because of that, this is my sort of own supposition, I think he doesn't feel like he has to do everything that a computer can do. He understands that it's a tool, and you use that tool to accomplish what you're trying to do, but only as much as you want to do. Not, you know, well, can we do this and this and this and this against the computer? You can do everything. But when you're using a computer more as a tool, you understand that you use it to do very specific things. And
you know,
that's what I think that he is smart in that way.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because when I hear you say this, it makes me think, I mean, you may find the analogy strange because we're talking about the monument in filmmaking, and Roger Muntu is entering the studio. Good to see you, man.
See
10
you
minute, man. All right.
You.
Yes, the applause that he richly deserves. Absolutely. So, but, you know, I believe Roger Ebert wrote the exact same thing about 2001, A Space Odyssey. In other words, I remember the first line of his review of that movie, which is, the wonderful thing is not so much what how much Kubrick does, but how little. And it probably sounds very silly, especially after your description, to compare Oblivion with 2001. But do you see what, sort of where I'm going with this?
Absolutely. And I think that 2001 is a very clear inspiration for Oblivion. There are some thematic and aesthetic homages throughout the movie to 2001, as well as several other science fiction films. I think that's part of what your co-host there was sort of touching on, is that the issue with Oblivion is that it borrows from a whole host of different sci-fi films, but then doesn't really add anything itself to the stew. But yes, I would say that as far as Stanley Kubrick goes, one of the things that I most admired about what Kaczynski was doing was kind of borrowing from the Kubrick ethic of always paying attention to what's in your movie frame, and always having a sense of how much can I get away with showing you nothing at all in this frame? How little can I show in this frame to communicate what I'm trying to communicate?
I understand. Now, the last week on BuzzFeed.com, you wrote, very, very interesting article saying that, in fact, Oblivion may end up, and, you know, we're going away from the artistic discussion here about Oblivion. That movie may end up being, well, very likely end up being Tom Cruise's first blockbuster in I don't know how many attempts, because he's gone through something of a dry phase in recent years, right?
Yes. Other than the 2011 movie Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, Tom Cruise has not had a hit in the United States since 2006's Mission Impossible 3. He had Lions for Lambs, Valkyrie, Night and Day, Rock of Ages, and Jack Reacher, all of which were either disappointments or just outright flops.
You know, I remember seeing Mission Impossible 2, I think it was around 2001 or so, and I think John Woo directed it, and it seemed to me that I was finally going to begin really liking Tom Cruise, because he was treating the whole saga as a bit of a joke, sort of like James Bond, you know, with Roger Moore. The whole thing was a bit of a joke. You see where I'm going? And then he came back with Mission Impossible 3, which has this really silly, tense plot, I thought, that really wasn't leading anywhere, too convoluted. I don't know. Do you think the guy just makes poor script choices, or is there something more to his story there?
Tom Cruise has talked about the fact that he's a director-driven actor in the past, that he tries to pair himself up with interesting filmmakers. So he's more interested in working with the sort of visualists than with the screenwriters. I have a sort of different take. I sort of have the opposite take than you did on Mission Impossible 2 and Mission Impossible 3. I liked Mission Impossible 3 a little bit better than 2, because I thought 3 was having a little bit more fun, actually, and I thought 2 was a little too was so absurd and yet somehow also very self-serious.
I know, but that was the charm of that movie, that it was so absurd, you know?
Yeah, I know, but there was also this weird self-serious streak through it that it didn't really pull me in as much. I guess I'm not, other than Face Off, I've never really enjoyed John Woo's sort of particular, I understand what he's doing, I just don't, it doesn't do anything for me.
Okay. By the way, for what it's worth, I absolutely hated Face Off. Listen, we are very close to, the beginning of the summer blockbuster season. Is there any movie in particular that you look forward to seeing in coming weeks and months?
Oh, there's several. I think this actually could be a very good year for the sort of summer blockbuster style filmmaking. I'm hearing really great things about Iron Man 3, that it may be the best of the series. I haven't seen it myself, but a lot of the reaction so far on Twitter for people who have has been pretty much unequivocally positive. I'm personally excited about Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes.
Yeah, that looks pretty good.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That looks pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a big Benedict Cumberbatch fan, or as I like to call him, Benny Batch.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I think there's still a lot of mystery about his character. They've been a little coy about whether he is actually Khan, Noonien Singh, from the original movies that was played by Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
And he may not be, but we'll have to, I guess, see the movie to find out.
If I may go very briefly on the Star Trek, I have to say I really, really liked Chris Pine as Kirk in the first movie. Mm-hmm. How they reinvented the whole saga in the first movie, that was very clever, I thought. And Chris Pine does a beautiful job, by the way.
I think, well, Chris Pine's just very beautiful, first of all. But also, what I liked about it was that they found a way to embody the spirit of those characters without doing caricatures. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I felt like Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto, especially, were really, they were recognizably Kirk and Spock, but they weren't doing Kirk and Spock, if that makes any sense.
Did you think that they had really any reason? It's funny, Arash and I were talking about that before, you know, the show. Do you think they really had any good reason to do a third part of The Hangover?
Money.
money.
Made a huge amount of money. And especially when you have a comedy franchise that is that lucrative, because comedies are generally relatively inexpensive to make, although The Hangover 2 was a little bit more expensive because they filmed abroad. Comedies are relatively inexpensive to make, and when you have a comedy make that much money at the box office, of course you're going to do a sequel. It's sort of a Hollywood law.
You know, I got to say, I mean, I liked the first one enough. I haven't seen the second one because the trailer made the second one look like a carbon copy of the first. And now they come with this third one. And again, I mean, those are good actors. I mean, what are they doing in a series of movies like that one after the other?
Well, paid, I think, is probably what they're doing.
Well, I think that's what Adam was alluding to. I mean, a silly question, but I think it's worth asking nonetheless. France, I mean, you wanted to ask something about Oblivion. So France, who is a huge Japanese manga fan, you are. She's laughing in the production booth, but she absolutely is. I mean, you know, absolutely. We got to hold her to it. You know, she's asking whether Oblivion might in any way be derived from the Melody of Oblivion, which is Japanese manga.
I don't think it. No, I Joseph Kosinski, it could have been maybe a touch of an inspiration, but it's not. It was not, I think. He's not talked about it being inspired by a specific Japanese manga. In fact, he developed it as his own graphic novel.
Wow.
He says that he came up with a sort of an original idea, partnered with an artist, sort of created a graphic novel that has yet to be published, and then used the artwork that came out of that to sell the movie. Initially, actually, he sold it to Disney, and then Disney realized it wasn't quite a Disney movie, and so it ended up at Universal.
Okay. Listen, we're preparing to close this segment. This has been a great chat. How often do you talk to your colleague, Kate Arthur, by the way? She's the one who referred me to you, by the way, for the segment. Referred you to me for the segment.
I talk to Kate Arthur all the time. We share, we're in the same office.
Okay.
And she is one of my favorite people.
We had a great chat when we previewed Game of Thrones season 3, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She totally loves that series. I like it. Would you tell her, please, that I've watched the first 3 episodes this season. I find season 3 boring to tears so far. It doesn't mean it's not going to get better, you know. I mean, I believe in the power of, you know, of a full season, you know, of developing characters and all that. No, I mean, extremely well-developed characters, great cast, everything. But it is so slow this year.
Well, you said you've seen the first 3. Have you seen the 4th yet?
Not yet. Okay, I intend to do that in the coming week.
You need to. I would reserve judgment until you see the 4th because
things begin picking up.
So I'll just say stuff goes down.
Okay. Okay, things begin picking up. Okay, good to know. All right. Listen, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to talk movies and cable TV and whatever with us. This has been a blast. So I will be seeing Oblivion. I will be seeing Iron Man. Definitely, I'm looking forward to Star Trek Into Darkness. This is going to be a fun summer. Thank you very much. Let's do it again before too long.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. This was really fun.
All right, thanks, brother. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to ID West. I'm Robert D.
Billy man, come on. 6 o'clock news says somebody been shot. Somebody's been abused. Somebody blew up a building. Somebody stole a car. Somebody got away. Somebody didn't get too far. Yeah, they didn't get too far.
Grandpappy told my pappy back in my day, son, a man had the answer for the wicked that he done. Take all the rope in Texas, find a tall old tree, round up all of them bad boys, hang them high in the street for all the people to see.
That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Many gangsters doing dirty deeds.
Too much corruption and crime in the streets.
It's time the long arm of the law put a few more in the ground.
Send them all to their maker and he'll settle them down.
You can bet he'll set them down. Cause justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
And we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, saying whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
And we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses. Singing whiskey for my men, on my horses.
In a couple of minutes, we're going to listen to a pre-recorded interview I did with Lars Grundmeier of German Sports Television yesterday. He's based in Munich, and of course, they talk about sports on his channel. That's because stuff went down in the Champions League earlier this week. There's been a lot happening in European football. Of course, we are nearing the end of the respective seasons, but you know, you heard about how Bayern Munich killed Barcelona 4-0 in the first semifinal of the Champions League, and then Dortmund pretty much did the same against Real Madrid 4-1. So it looks, it's not certain, of course, it's going to be a return leg, but it looks as though we're going to have an all-German Champions League final. Also, Manchester United won its 20th English Championship. I think it's must be like the 11th or 12th Premier League title specifically for that club. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think that essentially what you're having in England is a situation where Manchester wins this year, it wins the year after that, it wins the other year after that, then and everything that happens in between pretty much helps to justify ID West and the employment of various sports writers. I don't know if you followed the Champions League semifinal at all, if you've seen any of those goals.
No. But what I did see, though, was the replay when you know, of course, when the come. But I didn't watch the whole game. But I mean, just seeing those goals were amazing.
Sure. But without further ado, let's listen to Lars Grundmeier talking to me, Robert D, yesterday.
Awesome.
I sent you a list of questions since you had asked me to the other day, right? Mm-hmm. On Uli Hoeneß and Bayern Munich. But I feel compelled to begin with the actual games that took place this week. I mean, was it a case of Barca just being that bad, of Bayern Munich just being that good, or a combination of the two?
Yeah, I think that both get together. Bayern was very strong, but Barcelona was not that strong as everyone expected. So maybe they were not that strong because Bayern played very well, very defensive, and didn't let Barca get to play their game. But I think it was especially because in the coach of Bayern, Jupp Heynckes, did set up them very well.
Well, I mean, do you get the feeling that Bayern are feeling completely liberated at the moment because they don't have to worry about the German league anymore? I mean, they clinch with like 20 points, you know, a 20-point lead, which is something I don't remember seeing ever before, you know?
Yeah, that's right. They are liberated, but I think it's all about the team. You know, they have so many very good players, and it's so easy for them to switch. Doesn't matter who plays in the Bundesliga. They always have strong players who can win the matches in the Bundesliga and to give the strong players who play in the Champions League a little rest. So it doesn't matter. They can put in whoever they want. They're all on a very high level. And so they don't have to worry. Doesn't matter who plays. It's always a strong team.
By the way, how scary is it that Lewandowski and now Götze, both from Borussia Dortmund, are going to be joining Bayern Munich this week? I mean, it's been an incredible week for them.
Yeah, since I'm a Dortmund supporter, it's very, very dramatic.
I can understand that. My sympathies. And this after winning a semifinal match yesterday, you know, against Real Madrid.
Yeah. Especially since Lewandowski scored 4 times. So if you say that there are rumors that Lewandowski already has signed a contract with Bayern Munich for the next season, if that would be the truth, that would be very dramatic for the Bundesliga and for Europe as well.
Now, let's go on to the other big story of the week in German football, and that's Uli Hoeneß, of course. I mean, former German international, former Bayern Munich star, has been manager of the team, general manager since 1979, and now the story comes out that he had confessed to having an account in Switzerland, that he is free on bail after paying 5 million euros out on bail. I mean, there are lots of questions about him. First of all, is it possible that he will have to relinquish his position as general manager of Bayern Munich, even though he's made it clear so far that he does not want to do so?
Yes. I'd say that that all depends on what comes out next. So if it's really true that he evades taxes, and we're talking about 3.2 million euro here, that might end in him going to jail. And if that would be so, then, yeah, of course, he had to step back as president of Bayern Munich.
Now, having said this, well, that's true. I mean, he's actually president of Bayern Munich now. He's no longer general manager. So my correction, and thank you for correcting me on this. One thing, though, which I have to point out, is it possible, well, I have to ask, is it possible that Bayern Munich could continue their run of dominance in the Bundesliga if Uli Hoeneß is no longer at the helm of that organization?
Yes. I'd say yes, because the club is not Uli Hoeneß. Uli Hoeneß is the face of the club and the heart and the soul of the club since about 20 years now. But he has done a few things concerning personal, no, not personal. He's done a few things
personnel of the team, yes, right.
Like getting Matthias Sammer to join the club, who's a very strong manager. And if Uli Hoeneß had to leave the club, there would be some people who might continue the run of the club, like Matthias Sammer or Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. They are well prepared, but losing Uli Hoeneß would be a great problem for them, especially for the image of the club.
Now, having said this, I mean, I have to say, Bayern Munich has won every German league championship in my lifetime. You know, I was born in 1968, and they've won one out of every two league championships in my lifetime. This is unbelievable. Borussia Dortmund, as I see it, the team you support, is the one team in Germany that can somewhat, you know, try to stay even with them. They've won a few league championships. They've been brilliant the last 2 years. What is it that Dortmund has done that's allowed them to be Bayern Munich's one semi-serious rival in the German league the past few years?
It's the way Borussia Dortmund works and how they act. It's the whole club. The club is, when you look at the stadium, they have 80,000 supporters.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter who they play. They have 80,000 supporters when they play Bayern Munich, but they also have 80,000 supporters in the first round of the cup against a fifth division club. So the fans and, of course, the coach, Jürgen Klopp, he's a coach who can develop players. He sees talent and can develop this on higher levels. And the manager, Michael Zorc, who has an eye for talented players. So this all works together. A manager, a coach, and the brilliant fans, they create a surrounding that makes it very easy for the players of Borussia Dortmund to play freely and to develop freely.
Well, what do you think about the role of money, about the way Borussia Dortmund spends money? Because at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to in a lot of European, you know, football leagues. You know, you have to have some money, you have to spend it judiciously and all that. It seems to me they manage their money on good talent, maybe not quite as well as Munich has done. They're quite unique as far as that is concerned, but you got to give them credit where credit is due.
Yeah, sure. But there was not always the fact that Dortmund was able to spend money.
Well, I mean, beginning in the mid-1990s, though, then when they had that run, you know, with two league championships and the Champions League in 1997, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but the management of the club, at the beginning of the 2000 years, in 2002, they had a team that was very expensive. They bought players like Marcio Amoroso or Jan Koller and spent a lot of money. And 2 or 3 years later, when there was not this sportive success, they were almost out of money. They had to sell a lot of good players and started a new team with young players and not so well-known players, and they developed this team. And every year now, they have one or two players. They did buy a few years ago for small money, like Shinji Kagawa. They bought him for 300,000 euro.
Wow.
And sold him 2 years later for 15 million to Manchester United.
Wow.
Or they bought Lucas Barrios from Chile for 3 million and sold him for 12.
But you know.
And this continues now by taking Mario Götze from their own youth club. Or Lewandowski, they paid 5 million for Lewandowski 2 years ago when he came to Dortmund. So if they are selling him now, Götze brings 37 million euro and Lewandowski 25 to 30. So this whole thing is like buying cheap players, developing them to world class, and then selling them.
You know, one thing I have to say about Borussia Dortmund before we go out, I remember them playing in the mid-1990s and winning the Champions League and everything. Mm-hmm. The sense I had at the time, you know, with players like Chapuisat, Jürgen Kohler and people like that, and then last year with Lewandowski and, you know, and all the team around him and all, these guys are having so much fun. They look like 11 buddies, 11 friends together on the field. You know, to quote the famous German coach Herberger, you have to be like 11 friends on the field. And that's exactly what those guys were. I mean, is that the Dortmund tradition in a sense?
Yes. And that's the way of Jürgen Klopp, the coach. He tries to develop not only 11 very good players, or more than 11, he tries to develop a real team. And I think you see that every time they play in the Bundesliga and they play against not so strong opponents like in the past weeks, Fürth, for example.
Yeah.
They go very quickly in the lead, 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, but they just don't stop. They are so enjoying their game that it ends 6-1, 7-2.
Wow. Yeah.
And they're just having fun, and you can see that.
Well, one very last question. First of all, well, question in two parts. Do you expect after this week's results that it's going to be Bayern against Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League final?
Yes. The Spanish club both need a wonder to go through the final.
A miracle, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think that it's possible to beat Bayern Munich, even in Barcelona, 5-0, and Dortmund should do also very good in Madrid. They have played in Madrid and got a 2-2, so they know how to play in Madrid, and they can lose 2-0 and everything's okay, so I don't worry really much about that.
Last but not least, who do you see winning a final between Bayern and Borussia Dortmund?
That's difficult.
Is it really that
Bayern
hard?
Bayern is the favorite. But, Dortmund knows how to beat Bayern. They did that in the cup finals last year. And Bayern could only win one of the past seven matches.
That was an amazing match. That was an amazing match, by the way. I still remember seeing it. I mean, we're talking about Dortmund having fun. They scored some ridiculous goals in that game. I remember that very well.
Yeah. And that was Lewandowski, also the big player in this match. And when you look at the goals he scored against Madrid, there were two goals that were absolutely world-class. And, they are all in the mood to play, and they really want this title. So Bayern lost two Champions League finals in the past 3 years, so they also burn for winning this title. So you can't really predict who's going to win, but from my opinion, it is Bayern 60-40% for Bayern.
So it's Bayern games to lose. Well, listen, thank you so much, Lars Grundmeier, for taking the time to speak to us. Let's follow this tournament. Let's follow this competition. There are some fascinating weeks ahead. Thanks again. Take care.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
And Françoise Hsu has a question for Arash Rabasadi. She wants to know why people here in the States call football, which is played with hands, you know, gridiron football, and then the other kind of football, FIFA football, is called soccer here in the States.
This may be hard for you to believe, but they actually didn't consult me when they did the naming. I really don't have much of a guess. There are only a small handful of instances in American football where you actually use your foot on the ball in a legal play. But yeah, your guess would probably be as good or better than mine. I don't know.
I really like gridiron, by the way, which is why I hear it called in some countries gridiron football, because of the gridiron shape of the American football field. By the way, I think it's a really good term. But either way, good segue to the NFL draft, because that's the first big event of the football season. They basically draft players out of university colleges. You know, that's where talent is trained here in the United States, as opposed to clubs. And they draft players, or should we talk about that after the song? Let's do that on the other side of the music, unless Roger wants to ask a question.
I had a question to you, you, Robert.
What have I done now?
Before we can go to foot. What do I do? But listen, let's talk about Uli just before we do that segue.
Yeah. So let's go back to soccer. Uli Hoeneß.
The dude's 61 years old, right?
Yeah.
And he had admitted making mistakes in so many interviews that he has done. Do you think or you feel like this is a way of him, like, maybe, you know, voluntarily just saying, okay, you know, I made some mistake, and so it's going to be less charges, do you think, that he's going to...
You know, I hate to speculate,
yeah.
Because there is, in fact, there's an investigation underway.
Okay.
You know, concerning what he has done, what he is alleged to have done, how much he may have put into Swiss bank accounts, if in fact
and
it is established
gamble,
that he
right?
has done so. You know, I greatly hesitate to speak about that. I suppose the interesting question about this
right.
for me is what it does to his prospects of continuing to run Bayern Munich. I mean, he is the most successful manager, arguably,
that's
in
right.
the world
that's
in
right.
any sport. What he has done for that club is unbelievable.
But that was my next question. So with that,
yeah.
I don't think this guy is going anywhere. I think they're going to find a way to just skip him.
That's speculation. Let's just say, and Lars Grottmeier almost told us as much in the interview. I mean, he is not the
right.
club, but at the same time, it would be a great blow to them if he has to relinquish the chairmanship in any way. The other interesting question is what this is going to do to the German election campaign later this year. Could it have a minor effect on the German election campaign? And the reason I'm saying that is that there was a battle in the German parliament between the left-wing opposition and the right-wing government over what to do about a tax disclosure agreement
right.
with Switzerland.
Right.
For example, it allowed Germans who had put money into bank accounts in Switzerland to, you know, basically report their income, report that money to German authorities, and, you know, pay relatively minor penalties to German tax authorities. And in fact, you know, the left-wing opposition killed that bill in parliament. So does now Uli Hoeneß do the allegations against him? Does all of that become a sort of political pawn to be used in the election campaign later this year? Because there's going to be a parliamentary election.
Yep.
You know, that's a very interesting question right there.
Yep.
But listen, on the other side of the music, I totally want to talk about the NFL draft. Have you been following it all? This guy's an NFL fan.
Well, I'm a Pittsburgh
He looks like he's
fan,
a player,
so,
too.
Yeah,
do you play?
Retired, actually.
Retired, see?
Absolutely.
I'm a coach, I know.
He coached Troy Polamalu. Okay, you're listening to ID West. I'm Robert D.
Give me the slip. You know I'm not
Stacey's mom has got it going on.
True, yeah.
She's all that I want. I've waited so long.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Stacey, can't you see? You're just not the girl for
That's
me.
That's right.
I know it might be wrong, but I'm in love with Stacey's mom. Have you been watching the NFL draft at all?
I have been paying attention to it. I've actually been a little busy the past couple days. So,
oh, come on. You busy?
Can you believe it?
I know, seriously.
Yeah,
right.
That's what I have to say anyway.
Yeah.
But I've been obviously paying attention to my hometown Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, God, that team.
Oh, what?
I don't like them.
Why?
I don't know.
Excellence is difficult to
That's true.
To be in
I have to admit that. I have to admit that.
So good. Why don't you like them? Are you a Ravens fan? Or?
Well, because so many times I've lost a bet against that team. So many times. I've lost money. I mean, yeah, that's bad. That's bad to say, right? But I've lost. So forget it.
Don't bet against the Steelers.
That's right. Big mistake.
It's been, it seems like it's been pretty interesting, though. This is one of these years where the first seven picks out of college were all linemen. So, you know, these aren't the guys who put points
on the board. Not the glamour positions, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, whatever.
Right. And I know that for the Steelers, we had lots of needs. So we picked up an outside linebacker, which if you don't know much about American football and the type of defense the Steelers run, that's the guy who causes the most havoc for the quarterback.
You know, for those who listen to this show outside of the United States, I hesitate to go into details because American football, in my view, is an absolutely brilliant game. It's an ultra-violent but absolutely brilliant game. The problem with it is that you have a bunch of people who can't walk past the age of 40 in American football. But it's absolutely true. I mean, it's insane. The concussions, the injuries, you know, the hits your body take. But I can hardly think of a sport that places more emphasis on strategy. You need a concept to succeed in any sport. American football is basically an ultra-violent chess game.
It is.
That's how
absolutely
I like to describe
that.
It.
I mean, each play has so much science that goes into it. I mean, it's all done with calculations of probability. What's the offense potentially going to do on a long situation or on a short situation? So what position does the defense need to get in? And it is entirely a violent chess game with that one coach in the NFL preaches 7 seconds of violence and then take it easy for the rest of the game. Seven seconds of violence, take it easy.
You know, we're going to close out the show for this week because I had originally wanted to talk about Vietnamese food with a very dear old friend of mine.
Absolutely,
who lives in Singapore. But the problem, Singapore time difference and all that, so we couldn't have her live on the show. Yeah. And her parents used to own a Vietnamese restaurant, Home in Vietnam, by the way. She's from Hue.
Wow.
Also, in coming weeks, I want to have a cousin of mine, Sharmila Nicolet. She's actually the number one female golfer in India.
Whoa,
and
cool.
She, I have an Indian cousin, and she travels to all those great places. I mean, like, she puts Facebook updates from the Emirates Lounge at whatever swanky airport she is. I mean, unbelievable.
Is she in the States now, or she's in India?
You know, she must have been in the States a few weeks ago. I think last time I managed to tweet to her or something of that sort, she was in South Africa. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, total globetrotter of an athlete. Right. But I want her on the show.
It would be great to have
her. At some point soon. Mm-hmm. Just to close out, we've been talking about the NFL draft. The draft is basically one of those mechanisms that you use to bring parity into American football. Basically, the worst teams get to select first on the market for the players who are ready to come onto the professional football market. Mm-hmm. François Sue has one question for me. What do you want to know, beautiful France?
That's not true.
France is asking why women don't play in the NFL, although I do believe there are a couple of women's leagues, only, you know, they don't get the exposure, and you certainly don't get anything close to the income than you get in the men's gridiron leagues.
There's a woman, I believe, who tried out to be a kicker
this past year.
That's
correct. Yeah,
That I could see happening.
That's in the men's NFL, and she was real good, too.
But, you know, that is a tough game to play. You're dealing with guys who are 6'5", 6'6", almost 300 pounds, moving like cats.
That's right. I mean, that wouldn't be fair to them. Yeah.
To anybody.
So she's asking why women's soccer is more popular than men's soccer here in the States.
My guess would be that it's a bigger deal when after a match they rip their shirts off.
That's harsh. That's not me. But I can answer that quickly, Robert. See, soccer here in the U.S., with my experience, because I've coached soccer, actually, but my experience here is that most kids, when the younger parents tend to put girls in the soccer clubs than boys. So boys go to basketball or football. They don't want to do soccer. So most girls go to soccer because they love it. And now that's why we have a really good team in the U.S. That's actually, you know, a girls' team. Because
One other thing maybe I could add on a serious note with that would be that it's probably...
Seriousness after the shirt.
A serious note. I would say that it is probably a bigger financial opportunity for women athletes in the United States.
Sure.
Because, I mean, what else is there really?
Because there is now a professional league. There is now a professional league here in the States, yeah.
So, you know, the competition for athletes, female athletes, the sports they can play, the options are limited, I would say.
Okay. Well, anyway, this has been a wonderful show. Thank you, Arash. Thank you, Roger Muntu.
Thank you,
Maria, for joining us. Thank you, Alyssa, and, of course, François Sue in the production booth. We have a visitor, Yemi.
Yemi!
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the best. This has been ID West. I'm still Robert D. We'll see you next time.
Listening to Independence West on VOA.